originally from Tanzania, but I have lived, sorry, I have lived in Finland for 21 years now. This is my 21st, I'm counting. And I have this university background. I was born and raised at the University of Dar es Salaam. All my life I have lived in academic atmosphere. Yes, so I came to Finland and studied here in Haaga-Helia. Now Haaga-Helia, but then it was Helia, and then continued studying in Vaasa, doing my master's, and now I'm doing my PhD in the University of Turku. On actually the topic is inclusive innovation ecosystems, like a building an inclusive technology innovation ecosystem by emphasizing grassroots innovations. That's the topic, but this, the way you see it now, is how it's developing now. Yeah, so at the moment I'm working with the FINGO, which is a Finnish development NGO platform, where we have about 300 member NGOs, and they are doing different development work all around the world. And my focus is more into those NGOs that are working in East Africa. Actually, the focus of my research is that, and the focus of FINGO at the moment, main focus is that area. So then I get to get, you know, through my daily work, I come across a lot of things that are actually related to my own PhD, which is a plus. Yeah, so today I will talk about these inclusive innovation ecosystems and why we need NGOs to ensure that no one is left behind. I'm sure that, I suppose that all of you have some research background, so we don't have to start from the ABCs and, you know, the SDGs and all. So yeah, so I'll start from here. This is called Silicon Dar. This is from the Silicon Valley in the USA. So it's kind of a copycat of its Silicon Dar, which now we have also in Kenya, like Silicon Savannah and Silicon Cape, I think, in South Africa. So this one is for Dar es Salaam. And this is where my research idea came from, because first I started working with Finnish NGOs here that have been doing different development projects in East Africa as a volunteer. But then I used to go and meet the people in the communities through my work. A lot of people in communities, you know, in different development projects. But later I moved to the university. I started working with Aalto University, and then things changed. So through all my field trips, then I find myself meeting and mingling only with a different class of people. Like, I don't meet any more the communities easily. And if you meet some few people who are like from the grassroots, they are then the urban poor from the slums in Dar es Salaam, but not really like the ones I used to meet, like, you know, when I went to Morogoro and other places and worked very closely with. So when I go to this, like Dar es Salaam is like you go to university, you go to some innovation week and all these, you know, meetings in ministries and all. Then I started looking at this, this is the, they call it Silicon Dar, this is a road. It starts from this area called Morocco area up to this area called, this is Sayansi area, where we have the Commission for Science and Technology, and then it continues all the way. The University of Dar es Salaam is somewhere here. So this road here now is like the, it's like the tech valley for Tanzania, or the main tech valley for Tanzania, which is, of course, in Dar es Salaam, which is the biggest, like the capital, or not the capital in search, but now it's a business city or town or something, because now the capital has moved officially to Dodoma. Yeah. So the thing, the funny thing that I started to see here is that when you go through this area, you find all the innovation hubs, you find all the, a lot of banks and tech, you know, companies, software and stuff, everything you find here, also higher education institutions and all. And the people who actually live around these areas are the ones who know about these things. But the moment you go some kilometers off from this road, then you meet people who don't know nothing about innovations. Or if you tell them, oh, I'm here for the Innovation Week, they're like, what? What is the Innovation Week like about? Then I started thinking, like, because my family actually doesn't live too far away from this area. They are somewhere there, I think. I'm not very good with maps, but somewhere there in an area called Kimara. And whenever I go there, and then I say that I came for the Innovation Week, they're like, what is innovation? And then I'm like, you can watch in the news, you will see later than they tell in the news. But still, even in Swahili, it was to them like, what is this? And whenever I go to those places where my mother lives, it's the place where you see the people who are actually more in the need. They face those challenges that the people from this area are supposed to be dealing with and working with, if we are talking now about the SDGs. Because everyone here, when they work, they write down that they are, they do something, they're targeting the SDGs and all, which is very good. But then you don't see the connection between here and the people who are in need, who are the majority. So that's where my idea started coming from, there is a gap here in between. There has to be a connection. Otherwise, the impact of what's happening here is so small, it doesn't touch the majority of the population, and that is a problem. So I have been doing a lot of different workshops with my colleagues, because I have worked also with the University of Turku in a team, it's called Tanzania Team. So we have done a lot of workshops and different things here in the innovation ecosystem here. And during those times, then you see the advertisements of the workshops and events, and then you find that everything is in English. So then I started realizing how these other people are left out. It's because of what's happening here, something is not right. It's only right for the people who are maybe educated and those who are exposed, they have traveled, they know someone who knows someone in that ecosystem, then it's okay for them and it's okay for the world. Like, we are coming from Finland here, we go there, do different projects, then we meet our people in this area and everything goes, it goes well. And of course, I can't say that this is not important. It is important for the country. We need this kind of, we need to see this kind of speed also, that people are trying to work hard with the science and technology going with the global pace. But then again, when you look at this is the population of the United Republic of Tanzania. This was today, I checked online, and it says that it's about, 58 million. And out of these 58 million, you have 37% are urban. So you can see that the majority is rural. And if you have been working with countries like Tanzania, you know what rural means. It's not the way we see here. If we say someone lives in East Almi, you find them with a TV and a phone and, everything, almost the same how you live in Helsinki. So the difference is maybe not there at all, or even just too little. But here, when you talk of, in Tanzania, if you talk of rural areas, you know what I mean, if you have done research on those areas or if you have even visited. It's really those people who are, most of them are really in the grassroots, not well-educated. Maybe one member of family might have gone all the way to maybe the end of primary school, or some of them might have gone to secondary school but then stopped on the way, and then it's really poor, the way you understand poor. So that's the majority of the people. And sorry, these are the people that are now here in the grassroots communities. So this is the part that I have been dealing with now for almost 6 years while working with Aalto University and University of Turku. You meet higher education institutions. We have done some capacity building projects with the university staff there, the faculty people on ICT and GeoICT. Our project has been called GeoICT. And then we have the public sector. We have the funding instruments that are some of them from UK Aid and many others. And then you have the private sector, where we have the companies and development partners and these innovation spaces. I've been working a lot with innovation spaces. And this is where, when you talk with the people, you ask them who is invited in these places, then of course they will tell you that everybody is invited. But then you look at the situation and see what are the issues that actually limit the kind of people, not the number of people, the kind of people that come here. Then you come to find that, yes, it's the same things like could be the language, since many of the things that are used here there are in English, and somehow they have been adopted from this Silicon, you know, Valley or some Western countries, which is has been good so far to some extent to learn from the people from Western countries and all. But then again, it doesn't fit to our the African context. So then, and then you have these events and meetups. What I'm talking about, the Innovation Week and all that are funded, like with the UK aid and all, and many other things here. So there has been a lot of networking here, and which I have done. And then I came to realize, like, first of all, even around this place, some of them are not collaborating that closely. Some of them are trying, but still not that much as they should. So, for example, last year we had one workshop, which was like for the whole week. So we went with the higher education institution members, some members from like four universities, through a project in Turku. So we went to different hubs, like five hubs throughout the week. Like, was it five? Yes. And then we had challenges, which we were solving through those hubs. And it was also a way of making them go through different hubs and learn and see what is done there. And actually, most of the people from the higher education institutions who came with us in that week, they had not been to these hubs. They only heard about the hubs, but then they felt like, this has nothing to do with what I am doing. My job is to teach. But then these kind of workshops made them understand that, actually, you know, they got that, the aha moment came. That this is where actually you can go with your students or take your students. That's where they can, you know, do the work itself, the hands-on. They can meet the challenges and work on them for their courses and for, you know. Yeah, so this is something that first came to my mind, that, okay, if this is working here, like if higher education institutions have not been working closely with the others, and now actually we can see that they are starting to work closer, then what happens with our people here? Because this is where I've been concerned about the most. So after looking at this much, then I realized, like, okay, there is this gap here, which is like, first I thought it's empty, like there's no way, like, what can we do? You can't force you can't take someone from the university, like here, you can't take someone from the University of Dar es Salaam and force them to work here down. They can do something, yes, but they don't speak the same language. They don't, I mean, they are not in the same kind of level. So it's not easy to communicate, it's not easy to connect. But that's when I came with this idea that, okay, here we have the civil society, because these people here are already organized. So we have civil societies here, and normally when you go to these events here, like in Tanzania, you don't easily see NGOs. You might find the big NGOs, and most of them are in the international ones. But then even with those, few of them might be actively doing something, but the rest are just, you know, participating for learning and networking. So that's when I realized that this gap is here. Then I started to research on it a bit more, like what kind of role the NGOs can play in, you know, bridging this gap here, the two sides, which I call the two sides, even though I still see that we have an issue, there's a lot of issues here to work on, like, so that the people can actually work even closer than before. But yes, so then we come down with this triple and quadruple helix models of innovation. So with innovation, there are many definitions, so it depends on your definition maybe, but the way I look at it is that we need innovations for development. We have a lot, you saw the number of the people in the country, the population is growing very, very fast, urbanization is a very big issue, like Dar es Salaam is almost overcrowded. There's not, things are not enough for everyone. Nothing is enough for everyone. The opportunities are there, but then, you know, how to make these opportunities actually bring food to your table and dress you and, you know, make you live. That's an issue because people are not that educated. So then comes the issue of innovation, because then these same people we are talking about that are from the grassroots, that maybe most of them are not that educated, they are still very smart. I have been talking with a lot of people, and they are very, very smart. They can do things. And actually, I don't know if it's the funny part or the sad part, is that some of them have actually done a lot of innovations, but they just don't know that those are innovations. So then, in this triple helix model, there's this government, university, and industry who are like collaborating here. This was actually theorized in 1990s. And then from here, after looking at this for some time, then this came around 2009, was like suggested, because it became clear that when you have these three here, everything is done here, but then the demand side is missing. So it means that this is like kind of a top-down approach. So you just assume that what these people need, and you start to do. But when you involve the people here closely, like down here closely, that's when you actually understand their needs and work or do, I mean, your services and products according to the needs, according to the demand. Because another issue that has been going on before starting to discuss this quadruple helix model is that industries have been doing things that are actually, they think that those things are needed, but as soon as you do them and start selling them, then you realize they are not that much needed as you thought, then they end up in loss. And it has been a big problem. So then when this quadruple model, the helix model came, is that the civil society was brought closer. And when you have the civil society here, this clearly tells you that this civil society means that we have the citizens here, we have the community members who are the customers, of course, and they contribute to building this, the innovation path.
Sorry, can I ask you, when you use the word innovation,
yes,
what type of innovations are we talking about? Developmental, technological?
Development. Yes, yes. So development, yeah. So then they contribute to building the innovation path for socioeconomic development. And actually they also bring, you know, they release feedback to this side on the value of the innovation on the products and services. And also at the same time, they also contribute to this whole system with creativity, and they have knowledge. So there's a lot, then you gain a lot of things after bringing this civil society part to the whole helix, to the helix model, which was missing, this was missing. So I think, so after looking at the whole problem, what I saw, and then after looking at this, then I realized that, okay, if we have the civil society, like the NGOs, we put them there where there was a gap. We put them here where there was a gap. Then they play like connectors to the grassroots. That was my first, you know, first thing that came to my mind, that the only way that we can try to reach these people in a good order is through the NGOs. And then after that, after looking at this, then I concluded somehow after reading a few papers also that yes, this is almost the only way I see as the right way to do it in developing countries. And then why? Why these NGOs? What is the role of NGOs? NGOs have a history on development cooperation. They have done a lot of work in development cooperation in the South, in the developing countries. They, you know, they have connected with the people through humanitarian work. They have connected with people through many other kinds of solving social challenges through the years. So they have that connection already. So why do people, like, why companies need to go and invent the wheel again when NGOs are already there? They know what they're doing and they have done this for years. Because the problem comes that now when the companies are more, you know, powerful and all, when the NGOs find themselves left behind a bit. And that's where we start to see the failures, a lot of challenges when companies are trying to work and do products for or services for developing countries. But then you have the NGOs there, then why not work with them? And they know the challenges. They have worked with the challenges. They know the people. They can connect better with the people than if you take someone from Nokia company now and take them to a small village in Tanzania and leave them there for a week and say, okay, start to, you know, connect with the people and find the challenges. I mean, it's not that easy as you might think, but if you have an NGO there in between, which has done a lot of work already there, then it's much easier to connect. So they play as connectors and intermediary. They seek partnerships with government and private sector, and then they make responsible policy advocacy. They listen, they amplify the community voices, and then they respond to needs. And in the end, they network with other CSOs engaged in the SDGs. So this is what I think about the NGO. Of course, this is the typical what the NGOs do, and this is what I think that is needed to be able to connect the two sides together. And my research is still in very early stages, and this, what I have said to you today, is quite general, because my research will now go down and focus on only ICT-enabled grassroots innovations. So I will look only into those as a focus. Here are my references. So there is the Silicon Dar is a research, and one of the official researchers. So I'm starting the research there in Dar es Salaam to look at first, like, what happens there in Dar es Salaam, because why only this road has all these, you know, tech and everything, and then a kilometer or half kilometer from there, then the people are not, you know, involved. Then I'm like researching on that, and then I will go and look more into the whole of, you know, Tanzania, and maybe look at another country closer and compare. I was thinking of looking at Kenya, but maybe it's too close culturally. So I might look at Ethiopia. So that's the situation now, but it's still like very early. I started only in last autumn doing the research, even though I have been working with the universities for a long time, but I wasn't doing like officially the PhD. So now my knowledge is coming from different pieces. So now I'm trying to dive down. So I have looked at these books. Like, this book was published in last year in December. It's called Innovation for Development in Africa. It's actually my two colleagues from University of Turku who have published this. And here they actually also talk of this innovation-focused development cooperation. Because I have started to look at also development cooperation and the way it goes, because before, as I said, I have worked with the NGOs in Finland, Finnish NGOs working in Tanzania, and it was about the aid. And now, when we have turned the things to trade, then I'm starting to think that, okay, if I only study the NGOs in Tanzania, it's still a bit too shallow, because most of them, or almost all of them, are still depending on funding to do their work. So then I thought of starting to look a bit more at the development cooperation, and of course there is tech there. So yeah, and then there is this baseline analysis of three innovation ecosystems in East Africa, where you have the Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. I've been looking at that also. And this book, this Innovation for Development in Africa, the same authors have written that Development Aid 2.0 towards innovation-centric development cooperation. And then there you have those innovation and NGOs, a framework of interaction, and the triple helix and quadruple helix. So this is a short presentation that I had prepared, and I just hope for more questions and answers and a discussion, which can also maybe help you and help me at the same time. Yes, but that's my presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah. Exactly.
Community around.
Yes.
And just to kind of also to think about the kind of why this area came to be there, there's perhaps mm-hmm. the enabling conditions somehow in some way
yeah.
to study those things behind.
Yeah.
how it came to be. There's a lot of business
yes,
in the area also.
Exactly.
So somehow enabling resources.
Yes.
Available.
Yeah, yeah, like you mean the silicon dark.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and that's why I'm starting the research there. But then I'm thinking that there is already a lot of things to learn there, I mean to research there, that I have to really pick, like, you know, so that I don't end up doing the whole PhD in silicon there. Yeah, because actually the people I am trying to target, they are not in the silicon there. I just started with the silicon there to just see that why this and why you find people just around there and very close. They are not connected at all to this. And I don't blame the people in the silicon there at all. It's something that has just, you know, happened.
Which is the kind of the department or science that you are coming from? That which theories would you basically use?
Okay, at the moment it's still a bit unclear because, you know, my background is on business, business administration, but then I have worked a lot in management side, which I think my research is like more on that side. But my PhD I'm doing in a department of future technologies, where we have all these, you know, ICT and because I'm going to focus on ICT enabled grassroots innovations, then that's why I'm there. So it's still like, right now I'm completing the courses and then looking at the data, because somehow I feel like I have some data, but I have to organize it and really go deeper into thinking, like, what would this, maybe I'll end up even moving departments, I don't know. Yeah, but I've been looking at it more from the management point of view, yeah.
So I think it's an important question to ask,
yeah,
how all this research that's taking place up here,
yes,
connects with ordinary people.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah.
And I think that most people would agree that civil society is indeed,
yeah,
an intermediary and potential connector between what goes on here,
yes,
and what goes down here. So a suggestion for yourself, if you do make civil society the object of your interrogation,
yes,
is to probe the concept
mm-hmm.
a little bit more deeply
mm-hmm.
in the context of Tanzania.
Yes.
I got the impression, and you can correct me if I'm wrong,
yeah,
that perhaps there was an unspoken assumption that
mm-hmm.
civil society in this context operates benevolently on behalf of grassroots communities
yes,
vis-a-vis
exactly
here.
Yeah.
But of course there are serious questions, and there are big research questions around the accountability and the representativity of civil society,
yes,
these NGOs.
Yeah.
So you might want to then question the different types of NGOs that operate there.
Yes.
And distinguish, for example, between those genuinely community-based organizations which come out of communities,
yeah,
and so do have claims to legitimacy and representativity
mm.
and are accountable downwardly,
yeah,
and those NGOs, for example, which are created because a funding opportunity has
yeah.
arisen that creates the incentive for local elites to say, let's create this NGO,
yeah,
because we can access this funding.
The funding, yes. Yeah.
So that's just one example of how you might find that not all civil society actors are
yeah.
the same.
Yes,
so
not,
you,
yeah,
you may well find that there's really interesting heterogeneity within
yeah.
civil society, and distinguishing those actors which do perform the function that you think they
yes.
should,
yeah,
and those that are not.
Are not.
Might be a really interesting
yeah, yeah.
piece of research.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, I think that's very interesting, yeah. That's very interesting, and I have to look at that. Yeah, thank you very much.
Hi, I'm not an expert in this area of research, but do you know this institute that's where I started before, the Institute of Development Studies in the UK? There are researchers there that have done a wealth of research on these issues. In
yeah.
particular, Robert Chambers, who's probably the biggest name in the field.
Ah, yeah.
And John Caventa. So you might want to maybe look at the working paper series.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And
yeah.
There's a group at the moment led by John Thompson, looking
okay.
at issues on innovation.
All right.
And I suspect I was quite certain that Tanzania was one of the case studies.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much for mentioning that, because I have one contact only. I just don't remember the name, because I met him last year in Innovation Week in Tanzania.
Okay.
So he was from UK and from that Institute of Development Studies, and he, yeah. So they were doing something on innovations, and then Tanzania. Yeah, but I'm connected with him on LinkedIn. I just have to, you know, search there. So I will look at that. Yeah. So actually now all those, you know, tips of what to look at, and then they are very useful for me, because that's what I have to now start looking at more and more. This maybe not exactly now, but then the second part of spring, like from March to summertime, and that's what I will be looking at more into the theories, and then yes.
Something like connecting to Omar's initial question,
mm-hmm.
It may be good to think about exactly the type of innovation you're looking at, because
mm-hmm.
like this gap may be more important in some areas than in others.
Yeah.
Maybe for example, like I know more examples from Kenya actually,
mm-hmm.
and I think there are a number of young professionals have been programming apps, for example, to be used by farmers,
yes.
connecting them to local markets.
Exactly, yeah.
Having like this type of sharing of tractors
mm-hmm.
and connecting people. So I think
mm-hmm.
there, in some areas, it
yes.
has worked. And I'm not aware whether there was an intermediate
geo
participation, but I wouldn't necessarily think so. So maybe trying to see some case studies, like where it has worked,
yes.
where there are gaps more specifically.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I have started to look a bit on Kenya, and I realized that they are very, very much advanced on these grassroots innovations. They're actually really doing so much in bringing them more and more up, compared to Tanzania, so the gap,
mm-hmm.
I don't see a very big gap in Kenya as I see in Tanzania, but I have to look at that even deeper. So now, at the moment, I've looked only in Kenya. Ethiopia, I haven't looked much, but I think that there is also an interest of looking.
Mm-hmm.
I could look at Ethiopia a bit, but then when you think of the, you know, political situations and everything, they're very different. So, but yeah, I'm very impressed by Kenya in this,
maybe,
situation.
Yeah,
yes.
I say are relatively close.
Yeah.
Why the dynamics may be different.
Yeah. Thank you.
Other questions?
There's this general technological forecasting and social change.
Mm-hmm.
TFHC.
Mm-hmm.
Have a look at it.
Ah.
We've done some.
Where is that? Tanzania?
No.
You mean that?
No, I'm saying there is this general. It is a general.
Uh-huh. Ah, okay.
CFC.
All
right. You can put it there.
All right.
Technological forecasting and social change.
All right, okay.
It will be a very good source for you.
All right.
But then there have been some special issues on Africa.
Yeah.
On some of the things you are trying to do.
All right, yeah. Yes. All right. Yeah, all right. Thank you very much. I will look at that. And now as the next step is through my work, now we are organizing some workshops, like in starting with Tanzania, and then of course it will follow like Kenya. So I'm trying to kind of mobilize these NGOs to work closely with the existing innovation ecosystem. So we have like some, you know, workshops on like innovating for SDGs, the role of NGOs, and, you know, engaging the local actors, the community actors more into the innovation ecosystem. So just trying to bring them closer so that they can define their role, they can see their position, understand their position in the ecosystem. And, you know, in the future, we hope to see them as active players in the innovation ecosystem. So those are the few measures that are taken through my work, of course, which I see as a plus for my research and my future. You know, what I see in the future is that it would be good to see those local actors much more and more into the innovations. Because I think for most people, in the beginning, they have seen innovations as purely tech, which is not. And especially, I think, the people from the communities, that when they start to understand that innovations are about tech, then they, you know, it's not for me. But now the idea is to try and, you know, bring them much, much closer and show them that, or tell them that this is actually for you. You have a role to play, and which is very key role to play there. Yes.
Yeah, that you thought about the research methods that you would be like to use, like a bit more qualitative,
yes,
like expert interviews?
Yes, yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, expert interviews, so I will be doing like a semi-structured, you know, interviews, yeah. And I feel like, okay, I have a lot of the observations part that I have been doing a lot through my past work and even now, so I'm still thinking if that could be added there, because there's a lot of things that I would observe just because I come from that area and I know the culture, so then there are some things that you can't just explain or write, but you just observe them through, you know, what you see. If there's a, there might be a way of combining that with the qualitative methods, but that will depend on what we agree then with the professor.
I know that DFID had a project.
Yeah.
It was, I think, spearheaded by Tilburg Uni.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they looked at, you know, innovation for growth.
Yeah.
In some African countries.
All right. Yeah.
I have four dozen countries. I don't know, that was Ghana, that was Kenya. I think that was Tanzania. So have a look at it.
All right. Look at that.
You know, innovation for growth in the developing countries.
Yeah.
So
that
really they kind of.
Yeah,
They have a what we call the website. They can give it to them.
Yeah.
Look for that. There were a lot of work.
All right, thank you.
I mean,
will.
Using qualitative work,
Yeah, all right, thank you. Yeah, I will look at this. Maybe just then a question for you, like when you think of development cooperation, and then you think of Finland and the work that has been done already a lot in countries like Kenya or Tanzania. So what do you see as their role now of the Finnish NGOs in this innovation-focused development cooperation?
Well, we have expertise here on Finnish NGOs working
mm-hmm.
in sub-Saharan Africa. Generally, I think Nordic NGOs that operate in Africa, I guess the reputation or the perspective that people have on them is that they are innovative.
Yes.
And that they also follow generally quite, in political terms, liberal ideals.
Mm.
So much of it is based implicitly or explicitly on a rights-based framework.
Yeah.
Individuals have the right to develop, the right to technology, etc.
Yes.
And that's not unique to the Nordic world, but it's recognized that the Nordic world is one of the kind of big pushes in this area.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. I hope next time then, after maybe a year or something, I come with more like deeper into the theory and everything.
Yeah, we look forward to
it. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.